Every punch I ever thrown has been on my own. Nobody showed me how to do this.
Hello and welcome to episode 94 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hello, everybody.
Hi.
We have a double review episode for you this week. First up, we're going to review Creed, and then we're going to finish up with Krampus. So Creed is first, and Christy has that one.
All right, so Creed opened last week, and as you know, last week we were already recommending you go see it. And now we're going to do our full review. So here's the synopsis. The former world heavyweight champion Rocky Balboa serves as a trainer and mentor to Adonis Johnson, the son of his late friend and former rival Apollo Creed. This movie stars Michael B. Jordan, and it's a movie that shouldn't be good, frankly. It shouldn't be. It's the, what, like, umpteenth Rocky movie, and
like
that's a franchise that
something.
Has completely run out of steam. And then here comes Ryan Coogler from Football Station with the very, you know, charismatic Michael B. Jordan, and they bring Sylvester Stallone in, and they bring in Tessa Thompson from Dear White People and Veronica Mars, and all of a sudden, holy shit, Creed is amazing! Like, it's very interesting because it takes a different tactic. Like, you don't get the typical, like, hard luck story exactly, because his childhood was hard luck and that he is the bastard child of Apollo Creed, who died, as you might may or may not know, in Rocky IV. So he ends up in the foster care system, but Apollo's widow, this all happens in the first 5 minutes, this is not big spoilers, takes him in. So he's actually raised for most of his life with, like, in the lap of luxury, but with a big chip on his shoulder because he's basically a secret of one of the greatest men in boxing history. So he starts boxing himself, and he keeps telling everyone that it's not about his dad, but you're watching it going, like, buddy, like, your dad died in the ring. Something about, is this about your dad? But it's done in a way that, like, you're on this journey with him, and you're with him trying to figure out what this means to him. And he goes to Rocky and he's like, you knew my dad and I want your help. And of course there's a big fight that is going to mean a lot, not just in the world of boxing, but to him personally. And I don't give a fuck about boxing. I don't really, sports in general, I don't really care. And the Rocky movies I could take or leave 90% of the time, though, like, Rocky is just part of all of our minds. Whether you've seen the movie or not, you know Rocky.
I feel like pretty much everyone feels like the Rocky movies you can take or leave 90% of the time. I don't know many people who'll defend more than, like, two of them.
Yeah, and it's like, I was actually really taken off guard by this because I know some people liked it, but I was just afraid it was going to be not for me. And this movie is so well made and so moving that it's completely for everyone. I adored it, and when the Rocky theme plays, I like cried. I was just so overcome with emotion.
I think what I liked about it is, I mean, it's a pretty standard sports movie story, and especially, like, you know, if you've seen the first Rocky, it's like not that different in a lot of ways. But I think what makes it special is that it's got a lot of texture and personality, and it actually does feel grounded in something real, which isn't to say it's, like, you know, gritty in the way that we've come to understand it in, like, recent blockbusters. Just that it does feel like there's just a lot of life to the world that he lives in. Like, Ryan Coogler does such a great job of establishing, like, the, you know, Philadelphia, and, like, not just, like, you know, the famous landmarks, including, of course, those steps, but, you know, just, like, the weird little corners that you wouldn't know about. Like, there's, like, randomly a motorbike gang that just hangs out,
like, the 12
in, like,
o'clock
a lot
boys.
Of the scenes. You know, it takes you to the parts of the city that are, you know, not like terrible, but not great, just kind of like everyday normal places. It, you know, and the, even the dialogue, there's, like, a lot of it's not that it's a comedy, but it's the characters have a sense of humor about themselves, about the situation. And so there's just, like, a lot of, like, personality. You get a really good sense of who these people are, and it goes a long way toward making them feel really real.
Yeah,
well, they
textured.
Also feel really real because of the performances. All of them are so damn good in this movie. It's like, I wasn't that thrilled about this movie either. Obviously, I've seen most of the Rocky movies, and, like, they're fine, but I've never been that big of a Rocky fan, so I also thought it was going to be, like, a take-it-or-leave-it kind of film for me. But holy shit, does Michael B. Jordan and Sylvester Stallone have chemistry? And, like, Tessa Thompson, oh my god, like, that should have been a really, like, bland whatever girlfriend type character that's kind of just there so he could have some woman in his corner to root him on at the end of the film. But their relationship was, I thought that was one of the most moving parts of the film. And her character is just so interesting. It's so nice to see a female lead with such, like, unique flavor and interest and, like, her own unique personality. She is just, she's so damn good.
One touch I really liked about the movie is they introduced Tessa Thompson, and she's like his, they meet because she's playing music too loud and he's her neighbor and he's like, hey, can you turn the music down? And then he sighs and sees she's beautiful and he's like, hello there. But they have a conversation and she talks about how she is a musician who has progressive hearing loss. So like him, her dream has a short shelf life. And I thought that was a really beautiful parallel. And there's also a part where she kind of calls him out on, like, basically kind of is like, am I just a booty call to you type of thing? And he's like, well, I don't know. And she's like, whatever, maybe I'm using you for inspiration too. It's fine. And I actually really liked that they, it feels like we could walk away from Creed and have a whole story with Tessa Thompson's character, because she, Bianca, is that well developed. And that's what I really enjoyed about this movie, is just how rich the world felt. And I'm not saying I want a sequel, because they're already talking about that. And I kind of don't want a sequel. I love this story and I want this story to just be this story. But it's rich enough they could.
Yeah, I was okay, so it's pretty clearly intended to relaunch the franchise, which means they very much want to do a sequel, and I feel like Michael B. Jordan probably also really wants a sequel, because Fantastic Four didn't fucking go anywhere.
I thought you were going to go there.
Yeah. He's like, please let this take off, and no one can ask me about Fantastic Four ever again.
Right? But then when I walked out, I was like, as much as I loved this, and, you know, as much as, like, I mean, here, we're all here, like, eating crow, because we're all like, psh, a Creed spinoff, okay, and then it worked. So, I mean, maybe there is a great sequel to be had from it, but I walked out being like, what would a sequel even be, and would I be interested? Because this, you know, this covers a lot of ground, but I'm like, well, the next movie is what, like, his boxing career, like, progressing incrementally, like...
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine him finding a fight that's as meaningful.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean... But because of that, like, I can't imagine what the sequel would be, and I kind of wouldn't mind if, this isn't gonna happen, but how great would it be if we had a spinoff about Tessa Thompson's character?
For real. Bianca! But one thing I do want to talk about is Sylvester Stallone is amazing in this. Like, I feel like, you know, because he's Stallone and he has the voice, and he becomes kind of a cartoon, especially, and he played into that with The Expendables. Like, it was totally fine that he was kind of cartoonish in those movies. But I was curious, and it's funny because he enters this movie so late, I kind of forgot he was in it. And then we finally get to Stallone, and I was like, right, Stallone! And he's great. Like, he has lived in the Rocky character so long that it feels like walking into, like, someone's, like, familiar home. Like, I felt so guided by him. He just lives and breathes this movie. And if you watch the trailers and thought that one of the twists that they tease in the trailer seems hokey, it's actually really beautifully executed in the movie. And there's a line where Michael B. Jordan says, if you fight, I'll fight. And again, tears. Like, and not just me. There's a weird thing on Twitter that if you look up, men are bragging left and right about how many times they cried during Creed, which is like a weird brand of machismo we have apparently now.
Yeah, but I had, like, tweeted that this is the most I've seen guys brag about how much they cried during a movie since Inside Out.
Yep. Yeah, it's, but I mean, that's the thing. It's Ryan Coogler really nails the emotional beats in this movie, as well as building the arc of, like, who Creed is and all this kind of stuff. And I just thought it was really moving. I was also really impressed because it feels like a movie that speaks to the Black experience, which is not something we've gotten a lot of until really this year. Like, this year's been amazing. We've had Straight Outta Compton. We've had Dope. We have this movie. I know I'm forgetting more, but it was cool. Like, there's one part where, like, Bianca says, keep it 100. And there were, like, little elements like that that made this movie distinctly its own and made me feel opened up to, like, a part of culture that I don't feel like I get to that be that often.
I feel like we also have to mention the camera work here, because, I mean, if you keep up with movie news at all, you've probably heard people talking about that one fight scene that's done entirely in one shot. And, I mean, it feels silly to bring up the thing that everybody's talking about and not come up with, like, a unique topic, but that's something that really needs to be celebrated, because that is one heck of an achievement on everyone's part, on the director, on the DP, on the actors. I mean, holy shit, the visceral fighting that they're doing, and then just needing to sell their parts and also move around the ring like that, and what the makeup team needs to do with the blood. That to me is one of the most incredible achievements, that one scene of this entire year.
And also that it doesn't draw attention to itself like some other movies coming up do with their cinematography, which we'll get into later this month. Angie and I were bitching about this offline. We'll talk about it more later. Mm. But yeah, so let's wrap up with this. I feel like it's unanimous, right? Just go see Creed.
See it.
Yeah, it's got something for everyone.
And it's PG-13, so really, like, there's a sex scene, but it's a very tame sex scene. It's implied. And then they cut to Turtles, which everyone loves. So just... You know, take your kids. It's fine. This is outstanding.
You know what else is rated PG-13? Krampus!
We did a segue!
Seriously, I got so excited when you brought that up. So actually, but really, I mean, it's a PG-13 horror movie. So, you know, it really is suitable for more ages than you might expect. And Krampus, okay, wait, before I jump into what I wanted to say. So here's the IMDb synopsis, which is super short. A boy who has a bad Christmas ends up accidentally summoning a Christmas demon to his family home. That's really, like, the most simple, bare-bones way to describe this movie, because that's what it's about. It's about, like, this real-life legend that people around the world believe in, Krampus, who's basically the anti-Santa. So when this kid, Max, loses his Christmas spirit and tears up his note to Santa, he winds up conjuring Krampus, who basically punishes people on Christmas and... Krampus goes after his family. This comes from the director of the movie Trick or Treat, which, I mean, I've spoken about on this show enough. You better freaking know what Trick or Treat is at this point.
For real. And what are you listening to us for if you don't know that?
Seriously.
At this point?
I absolutely adore Trick or Treat. And it's been 6 years since Trick or Treat hit theater, so I have just been counting down the seconds until director Mike Dougherty could produce a second feature, and the time has finally come. And while I don't think Krampus is as good as Trick or Treat, I think it pretty much lived up to my expectations. I had just a shit ton of fun with this movie. It lags a little bit in the middle because I think what Dougherty does that some might not expect is I think he focuses a lot more on the family dynamic and how this whole experience changes their relationship. And it's all about just like this dysfunctional family learning to work together. And things don't get like truly chaotic and horrific until the tail end of the movie. So I think it could have used a little more momentum in the middle.
I love that about it. I mean, like, for me,
I ended up appreciating that, but it is a little slow in the middle.
I'm with Perry. I was watching it and, like, you know, I appreciated that it was, like, in the beginning, in the first act especially, it almost feels more just like a family dramedy. And I appreciated that, but at the same time, like, there was a point where, like, the scares have started, but they're still doing the family drama thing, so the scares are really spaced out, and I started to get, like, I wasn't, like, bored exactly, but I was a little bit like, all right, let's move it along. Let's see what happens next. I mean, it does pay off later. But
what makes
the pacing
more
is
glaringly obvious, though, is that when the scares do come in and the creatures come in, they're so freaking hard not to want more of that.
I want to talk about the family thing, because for me, what I liked so much about this movie is that it dovetailed two of my favorite subgenres, which is, like, I love holiday movies, but I specifically love holiday movies about how you love but kind of your family drives you nuts, like Christmas Vacation and Home Alone and Home for the Holidays. And my favorite kind of horror movies are horror movies about rule breakers being punished, which I'll chalk up to being raised Catholic. That shit gets into my lizard brain. So those two things dovetailing into a movie about a family that it like loves each other but is really struggling to maintain the Christmas spirit and live by these traditions and this idea... It felt like this movie was made for me. I was ecstatic, and I thought the family stuff works really well because you have an incredible cast of Adam Scott and Toni Collette and David Koechner and Alison Tolman from Fargo, and the main little kid in it is MJ Anthony, who everybody loved in Chef. And I thought that they played so well with each other and built this dynamic that made so much sense to me that it was like, to me, it was like the Amblin movies of the 1980s. It's like Gremlins. It's like, this is not an Amblin movie, but it's like Jaws, where, yeah, there's all these really scary, fun things, but there's also this moment to, like, acknowledge the family and understand the stakes of the situation. And for me, that all worked out great. I think that this movie is funny and moving, but also scary as fuck.
I'm not disagreeing with that. It's just the pacing that I thought was off.
Yeah. But I mean, it's like there's two sides to this. On the one hand, I did want more scares in the middle also because they did most of the creature work in this practically. So it's puppets and practical effects and it looks absolutely incredible. So I wanted more of that in the middle of the movie, but I do kind of like the path he takes in terms of kind of hinting at what Krampus is capable of in a really big way that you almost wouldn't expect. Like, I didn't expect the movie to go there so early on and then to treat what happens in the beginning that way. but it almost makes everything that happens to the family later on in the movie have more meaning and, like, makes you actually fearful for their lives. I also think it's really interesting how he manages to take, specifically David Koechner's character and his kids from being, like, the worst people in the world that I absolutely hated and couldn't wait to see die to actually fearing for their lives. I mean, they prove their worth in this family unit, and when, you know, it's when Krampus starts to go after other members of the family, you wind up actually worrying about every single one of them.
Yeah, I love that, because I feel like in the beginning, especially because you're seeing it kind of from the little kid's perspective, and he sees his extended relatives as just, like, horrible people, just, like, caricatures of, like, you know, rednecks and hicks, and he thinks they're awful. But, you know, as, like, as the family kind of learns to appreciate each other, you also start to appreciate these characters with them. Like, you know, they start to show their true colors and you start to realize that your first impression of them, much like the kid's first impression of them, was not necessarily correct. But do you guys want to get into spoilers so we can talk about the creatures and, like, some of the scarier stuff without, you know,
yeah,
giving
but
away
I
want to
say
much?
Before we go into spoilers, because since it is a PG-13 movie, I know that had a lot of Trick or Treat fans, like, gnashing their teeth. I don't think this being PG-13 has defanged this movie. Like, yes, there's not the kind of gore you can expect in a rated R movie, and there's no boobs, but it's a Christmas horror movie about a family. There really shouldn't be any boobs.
As someone who's obsessed with gore, I didn't miss, you know, blood and guts in this whatsoever.
No, I think it's really, like, it reminded me of, like, Gremlins or Poltergeist. Like, there's scares here that aren't reliant on gore, and that doesn't make them less effective.
All right, so do we want to move into spoilers now?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, so spoilers alert for Krampus. If you have not seen the movie, I would skip this section of the podcast. So here we go. Holy shit, third act of the film. The attic scene, and as much as I'm praising all the practical creatures in this movie, one of my favorite parts of the entire thing was when David Koechner's character fights off the little gingerbread man.
Oh my god, I was practically clapping my hands in glee. It was delightful.
It's just such a perfect blend of CG creatures that look legit and real and really appropriate in this world, and then also a spot-on physical performance from him. The two just pair so well. It's one of the most intense scenes in the entire film.
Yeah, I really liked how they tease the reveals of the creatures, too, because, like, as you suggested earlier on, they tease what Krampus looks like, but we don't see him in full until the final act. And then, when they go into the house where when they're looking for the daughter who's missing, you see a gingerbread man staked to a fridge. And, like, that made me laugh. It's in the trailers, too. That made me laugh really hard, because even though we haven't seen the gingerbread man in action, it teases that shit's gonna go down. And, like, Koechner doesn't get it yet, and he, like, looks at it and he's like, this is a weird family. And, like, that all worked so beautifully for me. And I also like that within the film and these monsters, there's a lot of references to other movies, which was really fun for me. Like, there's the snowman reminded me of a Christmas episode of Doctor Who, and there's a lot of kind of nods that are subtle and not like, like, when we complained about The Night Before and we were saying that they would do a reference to a holiday movie and then be like Home Alone. You're like, no, I fucking got it. Like, just do your movie.
Going back to what I was saying earlier about how they introduced, like, Krampus and what he's capable of early on that I didn't expect is that, you know, in these kinds of movies, when they introduce family members who are universally hated and obnoxious, you would think that they would start there in terms of Krampus picking them off. But I love that they go for the daughter first and that they don't resolve it.
Yeah.
Because that right there shows you that, like, anyone can be a victim. I kept anticipating her, like, bursting into the door, then finding her the entire movie, but the fact that they go for her first and then she's gone, I mean, that just really, like, fucked with my head the entire time, where it like, kept me on the edge of my seat. I didn't know what the movie was capable of.
Well, also, there's a baby wandering around, which freaked me out again and again, because I was just like, there's a baby! Like, what is going to happen to the baby?
From, like, a filmmaking standpoint, too, what they did was just, like, nuts. When I did those interviews in Pittsburgh before I even saw the movie, Dougherty tells me, he's like, yeah, we had, like, X amount of puppets, we had kids, we had a baby, we had there's a dog, and I'm just like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, that's
like, who puts that in their movie?
It's very hard to work with, but, like, I really love this. I got to talk to him this week about the movie, and it was great talking to him, because watching the movie, I feel like you get the sense that he really loves holiday movies and he really loves horror, and not on just a kind of, like, wouldn't it be funny to combine these level, but, like, a deep appreciation. And talking to him, he was casually bringing up references to all kinds of things. Also, he and I agree on It's a Wonderful Life, which I appreciated, which that it's a goddamn horror movie, people. Anyway. But it was really fun talking to him because, like, it reaffirmed to me how much this movie meant to him. And so, yeah, it's Trick or Treat for Halloween, for Christmas. Like, it's the same concept of, you know, holding the holiday sacred and these things matter. But it's like with this very fun satire of criticizing the you know, merchandising and Black Friday, da 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 da. And it worked beautifully for me. I found this really funny. I want to go see it again immediately.
Yeah, that's like one of the things that I appreciated most about the movie is like Trick or Treat, it had that addictive quality where it's like you don't just like the characters, you get like really invested and you want to spend more time with them. And that's kind of how I walked out of this. But going back to the topic of wanting more scares during the middle of the movie, the one thing that I didn't think got as much screen time as it deserved in particular were Krampus's elves. You know how they have that one scene where they come through the window?
They look kind of hokey to me, so I was fine that we weren't.
Maybe just having seen those masks so up close. But still, that's part of, like, the Krampus legend. And I don't know. That's something that I wanted to see more of. Even if it wasn't necessarily, like, them just, like, bopping around the living room. Something to tease them. Like, faces hiding in the background. I don't know. Something to build towards. I just wanted more. I wanted more elves.
Can I just say one more thing before we wrap up? I thought the ending was perfect. Because I was watching this movie and I was like, on the one hand, I can't imagine this having a horrible, like, sad ending where everyone stays dead because then it becomes a really depressing movie. On the other hand, like, to make it a happy ending would just kind of undo, like, everything you saw and make it seem worthless. So I love the way they ended it on this, like, kind of ambiguous, uneasy note where it's like a happy ending but with something hanging over their heads. I love that.
Yeah, I love that. I wanted to bring that up, but I wasn't sure how to say it without giving it away, and I feel like you nailed it. Like, the ending perfectly suits this movie and sent me out of the theater with, like, a broad grin on my face because this is it's twisted and sincere. That's another thing I appreciated. A lot of hard holiday horror movies are kind of made for people that hate Christmas, not people that love Christmas, and I love Christmas movies. And this is a movie that's all about, you know, that Christmas should be a time for family and sacrifice and giving. And if you are not down with that, here comes Krampus, motherfucker. Like, I'm into it.
Well, that was intense. All right, so I think all three of us are highly recommending Krampus.
Krampus and Creed. Make it a double feature.
Interesting double feature, but yeah, I kind of recommend that as well.
Yeah, do it.
So that's a wrap on episode 94 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You know the drill. Please subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also comment and rate us over there. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. And also please like us on Facebook as well. And all three of us are all over the internet too. Angie, you want to go first?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN. And I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
You can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko. That's KRISTYPUCHKO. And I write all over the internet, but you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
And you can catch my writing on collider.com, and my Twitter handle is PNemiroff. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
It's Christmas. Nothing bad's gonna happen on Christmas.